Greetings. Welcome. I wanted to start this meeting and thank you all for coming to the April 12th meeting of our community leaders with the ICANN senior executives. I'd like to go through the agenda as you see it in the chat area. There'll be opening remarks by Akram Atallah, our CEO, a bylaw update from Teresa, a review of the AOC activities by Teresa and or her staff, probably Margie and Larissa. We'll be talking, number five, on the conduct at ICANN meetings. I'll be leading that discussion with Susanna. Number six will be an update on preparations for ICANN 56 in Helsinki and ICANN 57. Nick Tommaso is on the line, as might be joining us with Tanzania King is also here. And then finally, an update on the community activity matrix, a follow-up note that Rob Hogarth recently sent you. With that, I would like to say if there is agreement on this agenda, we'll move forward. Again, according to the calendar notes, the call will be transcribed and recorded. This record will be placed on the SOAC Chair's Wiki for your access and to share with people after the call. With that, I would like to turn the floor over to Akram from opening remarks. Akram, welcome. You're no stranger to this call, but as CEO, we ask you to give us some opening remarks.
Thank you, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Very good. Welcome, everyone, to our monthly SOAC leaders call. This is a very important call for us, that where we sync up and we do get together on some issues that we're dealing with, as well as provide regular updates. And we think that the call is very valuable. It brings us all together and get us on the same track. And it's very appreciated for you to attend that call. And we will continue these calls. I think that the value is very well appreciated by all of us, including Joran. I think he's also very interested in keeping the call going after he starts, so we look forward to continuing this as a tradition. Now, the agenda is very full, and I would like to be brief so that we allow the different items enough time for discussion, but I want to bring a couple of issues to your attention. And I apologize that I'm going to be here for the first half hour, but then I have to move to another meeting that's in conflict with the agenda, with my schedule. The couple of issues that I want to bring to your attention is both the harassment policy. I think that it's very important that we deal with this. We are working with the board to provide an enhancement to the language that's in our standards of conduct. We will be, of course, putting that for public comment when we have some language that we agree on, and we will take the input and drive a consensus on that. But the discussion today on this issue goes beyond the standards of conduct that we put on ourselves as a community. We need to have a policy on how to deal with these issues, and then we need to develop procedures on, you know, how somebody that wants to enter a complaint, where do they go? How do they? What to expect when they enter a complaint? And what is the process that we will follow if a complaint is entered? So, since this is a code of conduct that or a policy that's going to affect all of the community, including the volunteers, it needs to be bottom up. We already have policies for staff, and so these are the things that we have in place. But there has to be a bottom-up policy developed that we will all adhere to. And it's challenging because it's, as volunteers, I don't know how you can set a policy that everybody's going to commit to following, but we need to work on that, and that's the purpose of that topic. But it's very critical that we get together and put our best foot forward and try to come up with something that is commensurate with the size of our meetings now and the amount of people that attend and make sure that everybody has their rights protected during the meeting. The second topic is the meeting that is scheduled for Puerto Rico. I will let Nick and Sally walk you through the thinking there, but I think we need to agree on whether we should stay, keep the meeting on schedule in Puerto Rico, or if we should consider a second venue. And my concern here, and I hope that you will think this through thoroughly and debate it thoroughly and come up with a good agreement on how to move forward, but it is important for our AGM to happen. And the risk might be tolerable now. We might think of the risk as, you know, it's okay, we should be able to go to Puerto Rico, or maybe we shouldn't go to Puerto Rico. But this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about fast-forwarding to the October timeframe and deciding for what we're going to do then. And we don't have the luxury of knowing how the situation will be in October. And so we need to mitigate that risk with the information that we have today. And I hope you you think about it that way when you're debating this issue and you come up with a consensus that we can all follow. Having said that, as I said, I will be short and give more time for the rest of the topics. And with that, I welcome you again to the call, and hopefully we will all get what we want out of this call as we continue to have it as we move forward. And if you have any suggestions for improving the call, for putting subjects on the call, please do not hesitate to reach out to David and I and let us know, and we will move accordingly. Thank you, David. I'll cede back the call to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Akram, and thank you for highlighting some of the points in our agenda. I'd like to move now to part three and turn to Teresa to talk a little bit about an update on the bylaw drafting process post-Marrakesh. Teresa, the floor is yours.
Sure. Thanks, everybody, and it's good to be on the call. So a couple things on the bylaw drafting and where we're at. I think as many are aware, the bylaws that relate to the transition-related proposals, so both the accountability and the ICG proposal that were transmitted over to NTIA, those need to be prepared and provided to NTIA as part of their review overall of the package. And so since Marrakesh, both our legal team and then working closely with the external counsel to the CWG and CCWG, so the Sidley Adler team, have been working nonstop to prepare both the first set of draft bylaws that were sent out to the community on the 2nd of April. And I think as many may be aware, the CWG and the CCWG have now been holding calls, reviewing the draft bylaws, taking a look at those, seeing if there's any questions, answering any questions that came up in relation to the implementation of the recommendations and how they're reflected in the bylaws themselves. The time frame here is very short, as you can imagine, because, again, we have to get this over to NTIA to allow enough time within their window. The objective is to respond to any questions and incorporate those, and the goal being to put the bylaws out for public comment which, as you know, is part of the ICANN process that we need to undertake, also as part of our own accountability mechanism. And those draft bylaws would go out on the 20th of April, is the current goal, and be out for a 30-day public comment period until the 20th of May. Then the preparations of the public comments and the analysis and everything will be incorporated with the goal to transmit those over to NTIA by the end of May. Subsequent to this, NTIA would look at the bylaws, aim to issue its report, and incorporate, obviously, what has been provided there. So I would encourage everybody to either be participating in the discussions if you're not already in the CWG or CCWG, but more importantly, during the public comment process, to really take a look at the bylaws from your lenses and contribute to the public comment process if there's anything that you've noted that may still need to be addressed. I know John was able to be on part of the call, but not all the call. But in case you're on the call or you or Akram want to add anything, please go ahead. No, okay. Any questions on the bylaws?
This is James with a question.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. James, please go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, I couldn't get to the the Adobe thing to raise my hand fast enough. Sorry about that. Thanks, Teresa. Appreciate the update. A quick question regarding, you know, how closely this effort is tracking or coordinating with NTIA's internal and interagency reviews. And I guess it feels like if anything material were to come out of those reviews where they were to say, we need you to make a change to the proposal in order to meet this test or respond or address this criticism that's coming from inside NTIA, how flexible are the bylaws to turn on a dime and encompass that kind of feedback? Because as you mentioned, I know we've burned up all of our slack in the schedule, and so this thing has to be responsive almost in near real time. So I'm just wondering how closely you're coordinating with that.
So they're undertaking their review and their interagency review, obviously through their own process. And I think if they were to raise something and flag it during this time frame, the dialogue that we're having now with the bylaws and various other things is obviously very open and transparent. And so my guess would be that if they saw something that was really clear that had to be addressed, there'd be the opportunity to flag it and the ability to still address it. But it's a good question, and I think, as we're dealing with this entire process moving in and the end of May timeframe, that's something we just will keep an eye on and ensure that if it's needed, that there's a way to bring it back to the community and obviously address it. But we don't anticipate anything at this point. At least we haven't gotten any indications at this point.
Thank you, James and Teresa. Any other questions? Fine. I want to thank Teresa for giving us that update and the timelines that are coming up, and we will make sure that our various groups take a look at that. That's a very important element. With that, if there are no other comments or questions on the bylaw updates, we'll move to the fourth item on the agenda, and this was requested by the GNSO Chair, James Bledel, to talk about this, and it is the AOC reviews and the scheduling. And that's Teresa, Margie, and or Larissa, or a combination of those. The floor is yours for that topic. Thank you.
Great. I'll kick this off and then allow Margie or Larissa to weigh in on this. So thank you, James, first of all, for flagging this issue. I know it came up in our discussions in Marrakesh as well, and I think it's important to raise on this call. If we could just go – I guess I have scrolling rights. There we go. So – many of you have seen this slide before, but as you know, we have a range of reviews that are coming up. And one of the aspects with the reviews is the organizational reviews are obviously part of our bylaws, and then those reviews relating to the affirmation of commitments are part of our obligations under the affirmation of commitments. And so as an organization, we obviously have an obligation to be conducting the reviews in the timely fashion that's been identified. And we appreciate, though, that many in the community are concerned about the timing and the bandwidth around this. And so here, wanted to really flag where we are and have a discussion with this group, and we can continue the discussion over time, obviously, on ensuring that we establish processes that in the long term are sustainable schedule-wise. You know, last year, and if I could go to the next slide here, we had conducted a public consultation with regards to deferring some of the reviews in response to community concerns, and so several of those reviews have been adjusted both on the AOC side and on the organizational review side. And any modifications that would come up to the timing of the affirmation of commitment-related reviews, obviously we would need to involve a discussion with NTIA around those. Though I would flag for the AOC reviews, and this is an area where the community may also want to look at the bylaws that are being drafted around this. As many of you may know, the AOC-related reviews are per the recommendations that came out from the accountability process for the transition, will be incorporated into the bylaws. And the draft bylaws will reflect how those reviews will be captured in the bylaws themselves, and are also proposing out of that that instead of being on a 3-year cycle or on a 5-year cycle. So that's an area where the community may also want to make sure they take a look at the language around that. So as we're moving forward, we need to take a look at both the timing of the reviews, whether the adjustment based on the public consultation of last year is now one that the community feels is sustainable, and to look at the review schedule moving forward. Really, I just wanted to flag here, happy to have a conversation with the community about whether we need to be looking at how to adjust the schedules a little bit more. Again, keeping in mind that it's an important part of the accountability mechanism of the organization, so this is not something that staff can just make a decision on. For those that relate to the affirmation of commitments, if there's some more immediate concerns, it would be important to raise that directly with NTIA as well. And then, obviously, happy to have a community discussion around this. And again, just wanted to be responsive to the specific request and see how the community would like to proceed forward and any guidance on this call here in relation to those. Larissa or Margie, do you want to add anything into this, or we could just open it up for questions and discussion?
Teresa, this is Margie. Just a few points, and then I think Larissa wanted to make a few points as well. This is Margie Milam. And as you think about this review schedule that Teresa has walked you through, really think about the resources that are required by your SO or AC, because these, particularly the AOC reviews, they're very specific on a particular topic. And so as you think of the types of people that might volunteer for these efforts, you'd have to look deeply at their expertise and to see whether they have the ability to participate in the demanding schedule that these reviews require. So, for example, under the schedule that was posted, we're going to do a call for volunteers for the next review, which is the second one of the Security, Stability, and Resiliency, the SSR. That would be that call for volunteers will go out in June, and that would be followed by a call for volunteers for the second WHOIS review team that would be issued in October of this year, and that second WHOIS review team would look at the current WHOIS policy. So what I really wanted to highlight just quickly is the level of activity that's going on right now in the community related to who is. As many of you know, there's a very big PDP underway to take a look at the overall who is and to see whether there should be a replacement system. That activity alone has about 80 volunteers, and it's very, very active. If you add on top of that a second review team that would draw from the same volunteer pool, you sort of wonder whether there's going to be issues of overlap and confusion as to what, you know, what's going on the various levels of who is. Couple that with the current activities that are going underway for the implementation for last who is review team, which concluded in 2012. Some of the activity is still not fully implemented. For example, there were PDP recommendations that called for the accreditation of privacy and proxy services. As many of you know, the policy activity related to that just concluded, so there really hasn't been implementation of that yet, and it might be very difficult for a second who is review team to take a look at how effective those improvements were made, given that they're still being implemented. So that's just the issues I wanted to highlight for you is really think about the resources and the overlap. And perhaps provide us with some guidance as to whether that schedule is workable. And with that, I'll pause and let Larissa throw in some comments as well.
Thank you, Margie. This is Larissa Gurnick. Hello, everybody. I just wanted to speak to a couple of points having to do with how the review schedule is triggered. And the way it is currently for both AOC reviews and the bylaw reviews, and this will maintain even with the new bylaw structure, what triggers the scheduling is the final report from the prior review. So we count off from either 3 years currently or ultimately will be 5 years. And it is 5 years right now for organizational reviews, from the time that the final report by the prior review team is posted. So when we take a look at the schedule, many of you have questioned, you know, how does volunteer capacity factor into this? And the simple answer is that the schedule in itself, the five-year trigger points, don't look at capacity considerations. It's just simply a schedule that's triggered by when the prior review was completed, and this is done so that we can ensure that the different areas are reviewed on a particular cycle. So there are several things that staff is doing without looking at changing the schedule, and that's really trying to improve the base of the volunteers that are skilled, interested, and available to participate in the reviews. So recently we launched the Review Enthusiast Program, and we're coordinating this work with all our, with other volunteer engagement work that's done by practically every other group. So that is a long-range activity, but obviously it does not solve the immediate problem of a number of reviews taking place at the same time, as already has been outlined. So at this point, I will open it up for questions, and we would be happy to take your feedback, and particularly any concerns about the schedule or ideas for how to make it a more sustainable schedule, we would be happy to take back through the Organizational Effectiveness Committee and the Board Governance Committee, the two groups that we work with and support that have oversight responsibilities for the way that these reviews are conducted, and we look forward to a productive dialogue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larissa and Margie and Teresa, obviously. James, you're next, and then after that, Alan Greenberg for questions. James, please.
Okay, thank you, David, and definitely appreciate the update from Teresa, Margie, and Larissa. Could I ask whoever has control of the slides go back? I think it's go back two ticks to the chart there. Thank you for the schedule. So I'm relaying and trying to do justice to a conversation that's occurred both in Marrakesh and on our mailing list since. But there's been some conversations within the GNSO Council regarding, and I'm looking specifically at the AOC mandated reviews, and specifically of those, who is 2 and ATRT 3. I think the concerns, as I understand them, is that these review schedules are on a collision course with a couple of things that we've been already discussing. And the first one I think Margie referred to is just drawing from the same pool of volunteers, volunteer burnout, volunteer workload, whatever we want to call it. You know, we're going to be talking about the same groups of folks working on these. The second one, of course, being the costs associated with cross-community working groups, and certainly these review teams have their own costs associated with them as well. But I think more importantly is that the subject matter is currently shifting as we conduct these reviews. It's not really clear whether or not the subject of the review will be static at the point that the review both begins and ends. And since these are self-scoping efforts, it's not really, I think, feasible to say, okay, you can only look at the who is elements from who is review one that are not subject to the RDS or not subject to privacy proxy. I don't think it makes sense to draw boundaries around the scope of these review teams. And I think the same can be said for ATRT 3. You know, would they be reviewing the accountability and transparency recommendations of ATRT 2 as they applied prior to the CCWG, ACT? I mean, certainly they can't judge the merits of those new mechanisms if they haven't been implemented or used yet. And so they kind of exist in this limbo of what are they going to be reviewing? How will their recommendations be fed into these existing work streams? And does the timing of that all line up? This is part of the discussion we've been having in the GNSO. The flip side of this is, I think, just a general concern that, hey, we don't want to get in the habit of monkeying around with the schedules here just because there's never going to be a great time to have a review, and it becomes too easy to, as a matter of routine, just to delay or postpone reviews that are coming up on schedule. So I understand that's a concern as well. So my question, and what I've been asked to do by the council, is to come to this group and say, what are other AC and SO's positions on this? Have you had these discussions? Do you anticipate that you will encounter some of the same concerns, some of the same challenges with kicking off these reviews as we've identified in the GNSO? And if so, do you believe that there is, particularly with regard to who is 2 and ATRT 3, do you believe that there is sufficient grounds to maybe start a dialogue with staff and NTIA about taking a look at the schedules for these two reviews in particular? And I just want to emphasize, I'm not talking about the SOAC reviews. I'm not talking about the sustainable schedule going forward. I'm just thinking these two specific reviews that are coming up here in the next 12 months that overlap with existing work. So that's my question, and that's what I've been asked to kind of bring back to the council at our next call. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Teresa, Margie, or Larissa?
David. James, go ahead. I think it's Alan next. Then I'm happy to weigh in.
Yeah, and I think, David, particularly I'm interested in views of other SO and ACs as opposed to, I understand where Teresa and everyone are coming from, and I think it's very clear that, you know, absent some clear direction or course change from the community, they're going to continue with these reviews on schedule. So I'm really kind of teeing up that question for other SOs and ACs.
For everyone. Okay, very good.
Thanks.
Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. I look at this chart, and I'm immediately drawn to a quotation from Friedrich Nietzsche: that which doesn't kill us will make us stronger, except I think it's reversed here. The theory is these reviews are supposed to make us stronger. I look at that and the coincidence of work, and I think it's going to kill us. If you're not worried about carrying out the reviews, look at some time in 2018 when all the ACs and SOs and staff have to review the output of these reviews and start doing something about them. This just looks deadly. The AOC reviews, by the time most of these will start, will be on a new schedule because we will have adopted the bylaws. So I think we do have some flexibility. When the 3-year or even the 5-year time between reviews was established, I don't think they contemplated how long it would take to fix WHOIS problems. We would be going into this new WHOIS review with absolutely nothing, almost nothing done, several processes in several things in process, and I think it's going to be a waste of time, to be honest. If from a personnel point of view, the same people who are very actively working on the new RDS PDP, who were working on the privacy and proxy, and some of whom are on the CCT review team, are the same people that we would be looking at to serve on a WHOIS review team. And as it turns out, one of these people is also leading the ALAC review. So there's just too much coincidence, and by scheduling them all at the same time now, we're guaranteeing they're going to be scheduled again 5 years from now or 4 years from now in a collision course. So I think we have to do something to rationalize this. I understand that we can't put them off forever, but that schedule just is insane. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Any other comments from the SOAC chairs to either add to? I know Rudy and Paul Diaz in the chat, as well as Michele, talking about the need for flexibility. Anyone else want to comment on that? Michele, you have the floor.
I'll cede to James, and then I'll go after James.
Fine. James, please.
Thank you. And I just noted that there was an empty queue there for a moment, David. But I was just going to say, before we sign off on this topic or this agenda, if we could at least ask those SOs and ACs who maybe don't have anything to report to this group, if they could take this question back to their SO and AC discussions and see if they can gather some feedback for the list. That would be fantastic.
Happy to help that out. Yes, happy. Happy to do so. Thank you, James. Michele.
Thanks. It's rare that I agree wholeheartedly with Alan, but I will agree with him in this instance. Alan, come on now. The WHOIS one in particular is causing a lot of headaches for a lot of people. I've said this in the past, and I'll probably have to keep saying this in the future, and maybe eventually somebody might actually pay attention. There are far too many parallel, conflicting, overlapping WHOIS-related activities. Somebody mentioned the proxy privacy one. Due to to a bunch of things which are outside our control, no work will be possible on the outcome of that PDP until June or July at the earliest. So even though that PDP finished, when was it? Sometime last year. It's just going to sit gathering dust for the better part of a year before things move forward. There's the RDS PDP, which is ridiculously big. So conducting a WHOIS review on that timetable is hugely problematic because, again, the number of people from the various groups who are going to be involved, they're already involved in other activities. So I see that as being problematic. So I think the message really is clarity around the flexibility of this and being a bit pragmatic around the timing would be helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Michele. Anyone else want to comment, though we'll give opportunities for people to go back to their communities, solicit additional views, and we can collect those. Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, just one quick comment. There have been some comments in the chat about we have to recruit volunteers.
for things like Whois and RDS, it's not just a matter of recruiting volunteers. You can't take a brand new volunteer and put them into this and expect them to be the major leaders in this. There's a huge learning curve and a huge background of information that has to be factored into all these things. So, yes, we need new people, but let's not pretend that we're going to get a bunch of new people and assign them these kind of tasks. It's not that simple. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Yes, please.
David, if I may just very briefly,
yes.
Before we jump to the next topic, I'm cognizant of the time. First, this has been very, very helpful, I think as James said, it'll be very helpful to hear, if people haven't flagged something here, to hear back on what they hear from the respective SOs and ACs on this topic. On those that relate to the affirmation of commitment specifically, those we need to look at in the context of the obligations under the AOC and with NTIA. So, if there's concerns about the timings and various other things, please also feel free to flag that with them. The other thing I would encourage everybody is, as the AOCs are being incorporated, as those reviews are being incorporated into the bylaws, we obviously want to be looking at processes for all the reviews that are long-term and sustainable. There will be cases where things cycle such that more accumulate one year versus other years. But obviously, we want to be able to be responsive as an organization to community concerns or recommendations and adjustments around that. So please also make sure that as the new bylaws are being drafted, take a look at them from the lens of ensuring that the community and the organization can stay accountable to what's being committed to there, but also that there's language in there that allows for any adjustments if needed by request of the community. So I guess two things. One is, look forward to hearing back. Very helpful. On those relating to the AOC, please also feel free to flag that with NTIA. And let's look at how to make any adjustments based on the community feedback that we hear from this discussion, and then a suggestion on next steps around this.
Very good. Thank you very much, Risa. Rudy.
Thank you, David. Rudy, for the transcript. Well, to just add to what Alan Greenberg was mentioning and to my comments in the chat, we need a lot of volunteers to cover the work in the GNSO policy work. And actually, when I look into my community, it's just a few members that are active in it. Having the experience with the GNSO review, it takes months before you're getting through it. It's a lot of work, it's a lot of calls, it's a lot of reading. And when you have a small community, you need to mentor newcomers and new volunteers in a way that they don't run away when they see how much work is coming to them. That's the reason why I'm insisting on probably having more efforts now done on inreach instead of doing outreach. We need to get our existing members convinced that participating in working groups, in reviews, and so on, is important and is of benefit to the community itself.
Thank you, Rudy, and a good point about getting engagement from the various community members to assist in all aspects of our policy and review work, so thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? Noting the time, I will proceed to move to the next item on the agenda, item number 5, which is termed a conduct at the ICANN meetings. And this, of course, relates to the opening statement by Akram on the behavior at ICANN meetings, the standard of behaviors that we have currently, and ways to look at that, drawing on either best practices or other standards, as well as going forward with procedures that might be applicable at future ICANN meetings. You saw the note that I sent around to people looking at possibly creating a light touch consultation group with a good representation from the SOs and the AC communities as a way to do that, either to comment on what the board may indeed suggest as an interim step and or move forward with other possible ways of procedures to address that to show our concern and commitment. With that, I would just like to open it up to any comments or questions that you may have on that. And I know full well of the burdens we all have getting people to do this, and this is why I would look to a rather quick and light touch group, consultation group, to move rather quickly in this area. But I would just open it up to any other comments or questions at this stage. Michaela?
Thanks, David.
James, you're next.
I posted this, I don't know whether that was to a list or to a CC, but I'm just repeating for those who may not have seen it or whatever. I have concerns about this quote-unquote community-type concept. None of us have the expertise in this space. I would be a lot more comfortable if any policy that people feel needs to be drafted was drafted by people with expertise in this space, and that we as the community were to look at that, look at some kind of draft policy and work from that, rather than a bunch of people who are very well intentioned but don't know the first thing about this trying to come up with something. I don't think that's, I think that's a recipe for absolute failure. And I, while I appreciate that ICANN likes to do things in a bottom-up approach, when it comes to something like this, I really don't think that following a kind of a blind, it has to be bottom-up because where ICANN approach is going to work. I really don't. I think you need to have, I mean, there are people, there are companies out there who understand and know how these things can work, who have the expertise. Those are the kind of people who should be drafting something like this. Obviously, in how one implements any kind of policy within the space of ICANN and its meetings is going to be probably require a bit of work, maybe a bit of tweaking. But I'm also very conscious of the fact that there's been a kind of a knee-jerk reaction from ICANN senior management, and we may end up with something that is far more complicated than it really needs to be. I mean, while on this call earlier, I was looking at, you know, the right meeting thing. They have a very simple policy. It's like about three lines. So I'll just leave that. Thanks.
James, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry, did somebody call my name yet? Or? I was waiting for David or something.
Yeah, James, now we can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, well, I wasn't speaking. That's why you couldn't hear me. I was waiting for someone to,
all right.
to call my name. Anyway, thank you. And just to reiterate, agreement with Michele, I think Greg and some other folks posted on the list. You know, kudos to our volunteers, myself included. We all think we are well-intentioned and can weigh in and contribute on just about any subject, but this is one probably that would benefit from some folks who actually do this for a living and have some expertise in this area. Particularly, I think, and just going back to Akram's opening statements, particularly if the intention is to augment
the existing standards of behavior versus having a separate policy with a separate reporting, investigation, and enforcement function. I think that, you know, that needs to be understood. And the sooner that you can get this, you know, I just would caution against going too far down the road as a staff exercise. The sooner you can get the community engaged in this, I think it will help legitimize whatever comes out of this effort. So, so disagreeing with McKelly and some of the traffic that's on the list. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Rudy.
Thank you, David. Rudy, for the transcript. Well, I'm just a little bit comparing to what experience I had in Belgium in companies where some rules about the specific issue were in fact implemented. They were generally implemented in public services in companies, and each department, for instance, needs to have a contact person that is available for typical addressing the issue, so that if somebody feels being harassed, they can go to that person, and that person has the responsibility to take up the issue. And based on rules that are actually implemented in the business world and in the public services world, maybe we can just have a look at those and see if we could modify them in a way that they are usable in ICANN. Perhaps that is a good kickoff of finding a way forward.
Thank you, Rudy, about, again, gathering some best practices. Rafiq, you're next. I heard you earlier on, so please.
Okay. Thanks, David. I understand, let's say, I may agree with the comments from Michele, but, I mean, my side, I got several members from MCUC who worked on this issue in other spaces, and they have some experience. They are looking forward to get involved and help. So I guess maybe we can have a group that it's a mix between members of the community that they can show some experience on this kind of issue, and also getting maybe external experts and so on if it's possible. I'm not sure how it may work here, but to have the mix that maybe alleviate any concerns about, I mean, as I understand from Nikkei, that people can be well-intentioned, but they are not necessarily well-prepared to handle this kind of question, and also maybe to see what the GNSO Council, I think there was some sub-team within GNSO Council to work on this, and preparing a letter, maybe James can talk, can give more details about what they are going to deliver. And so, yeah, I mean, having a mixed group of experts and members of the community that can show some experience on working maybe on other in other conferences and events, because the issue is not just unique to ICANN, but it happens in different spaces, in particular technical and you know, technology-related conference.
Thank you, Rafiq, for noting some people within the NCUC's group having worked in this area. Any other comments? James, please.
Thank you. Just to respond to Rafiq's question, there was a group that volunteered, a subgroup of folks from the GNSO that volunteered in Marrakesh to work on this issue. They came up with some draft proposals or points or conversation starters. And with that document, as well as the statement that was released, I believe, a couple of weeks ago from the NCUC, we are probably, and I say probably because I don't want to presume the outcome, but we are probably going to approve a letter from the GNSO Council
to Akram, if he's still on the call, that would just indicate our support for continued work in this area and our willingness as a GNSO volunteer community to engage in further work on developing either a standalone policy or some sort of augmented provisions of the standards of behavior. So all of that is, I think, on the table for discussion for our next meeting on Thursday, which is 2 days from now, and I'm hoping that we'll have something a little bit more concrete to share with this group following that call.
Thanks, James. Any other comments or questions? So we've received comments to sum up about the need to have expertise or people who have experience in this area and maybe not necessarily the community members to look at other options or look at more detailed ways of expressing this type of anti-harassment approach to protect our participants. Not to make it complicated, RIPE NCC supposedly has a very a simple and easy one. I know IETF and others have talked about this as well. And there was agreement, James, Michele, and Greg, to maybe view it this way. Others talked about the best practices and other members of the community that may have something involved, including a GNSO suggested letter. So what I will do is I will make sure that we take these three strands together and we wait for the GNSO letter as well and come back to others who have not expressed a view to see if there's any consensus moving forward, but surely a consensus to the importance of this issue and to be able to comment on things going forward. And we will go from there through email contacts at that point. If there's agreement on that to move forward, I'll do it that way. And with that, I would like to move to Nick Tomaso and Tanzanika King to talk about item 6 on the agenda, preparations for ICANN 56 in Helsinki and ICANN 57. Nick, the floor is yours.
Thank you, David. Good day, everyone. This is Nick Tomaso. We're going to start with ICANN 57 first. And I think Akram did a very good job of positioning this issue for all of us. What I'd like to do now is give you a balanced view of where what we're facing and what we're considering as we move forward. So next slide, please. To state the obvious, the Zika virus is widespread throughout Puerto Rico with prediction that 20% of the population will be infected over time. The virus is linked to microcephaly and other birth defects. And it can be sexually transmitted, which means this isn't just about pregnant women visiting Puerto Rico. This is about perhaps somebody taking it home with them, having been bitten by a mosquito. So that's the extent of the problem. Next slide, please. So we have two options, the way I see it. One is to relocate the San Juan meeting to an alternate location. It's very late in the process of trying to find an alternate locations in October, which is the busiest time of the year for conferences around the world. But that said, I'm happy to say that we did find an option in Las Vegas at Bally's Hotel the week prior. If you'll remember, the meeting was scheduled for October 29th to November 4th, and this one would be the 22nd through the 28th. And, of course, the other option we have is to hold the meeting in San Juan as planned. Can we go to the next slide, please? So what should we consider as we think about this? Just last night, the CDC made an announcement that while the conditions in Puerto Rico are the worst that there are in the United States, they said that the mosquito known to carry the Zika virus exists in 30 states in the U.S., and they're preparing, the U.S. government is preparing for a spread of the virus to the U.S. mainland. If you look at the map that they provided in that article, you'll find that Las Vegas, if you will, is at the very northern end of the infected virus area. So what do we do when it comes to relocating a meeting? The second thing we ought to consider is that we have an active host in Puerto Rico. NEC.PR, Pablo Rodriguez are very active. Next thing we should consider is that we have a $1.2 million cancellation penalty to move the meeting out of Puerto Rico. Now, there are ways we might mitigate that by agreeing to put the meeting, a future meeting there, and negotiating our penalties down, or by enforcing or enacting force majeure. It doesn't take place until 15 days or so before the meeting is to take place. So if the problem, physique of problem, I see James's comment on list here. If the problem continues to exist in October, then yes, we can use force majeure, and recover or recover any monies that we've paid. The other thing we ought to consider is the LAC TLD statement on the on global internet meetings in the Latin America and Caribbean region. Basically, they were concerned that we pulled out of Panama and now potentially pulling out of San Juan, even though it's not a Latin America conference, it certainly is close enough to the region. And then there's other social media out there, pros, cons, neutral, that just cover this issue. Next slide, please. So here's the point where we need feedback from all of you to help us understand what your thinking is and what the community thinks about this, and be able to take it to the board of directors later this week to help inform their decision as to which way we should go with this. So that's it, folks. I'll open it up to questions, open the floor to anyone who wants to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Rudy is first in line. Others, please indicate. Rudy, please.
Thank you, David. Rudy, for the transcript. Well, I would rather put another question on the table. Is there a place on Earth where it is safe? I don't really think so. Just discovered that in Brussels the airport is closed again. They discovered the suspicious car. The flight control is down. So you see, considering that a virus is all of a sudden the reason to reschedule and reallocate meetings is, to me, just one step too far. You could say that you couldn't go to some African countries because of the fact that it's risky. Although I have been in many places, and till now, well, you see, if what happened in Brussels was 2 weeks earlier, I would have been in the airport at that time, so I don't know if I would have survived it. So I would consider taking things relatively and consider that if there is a need for meetings and there is a place where we should go to demonstrate that we are not afraid of that part of the world, we should go.
Thank you, Rudy. James Taylor. James.
Hi, thanks. James speaking, and I just want to weigh in on a personal level rather than speak to to any sort of community. I think I agree with Rudy to some extent. Every place has risks associated, whether they're physical threats like what's going on in Brussels versus health issues or what have you. I question how likely it is for us to encounter mosquitoes in the sterile, air-conditioned, windowless basement conference rooms that we tend to spend the bulk of our time in when we attend these meetings. But that said, I'm trying to be mindful of the fact that as a guy and as someone who doesn't whose child fathering and raising, years are probably in my past, I mean, I may not fully appreciate the risks that others might feel in going to a place that is arguably suffering a much more extensive outbreak of this virus than the meeting we just canceled in Panama. So I feel like we need to be sensible about this. I don't think that we can just ask folks to take these risks lightly. And I think that, you know, I don't personally, and I just kind of chatted it there in the chat, I don't think that the cancellation fee is something that should be a deterrent, because I believe we stand a pretty good chance of getting that back. I'm sensitive to the lack of TLD concerns about pulling out of two Caribbean and Latin American region meetings, but I think that, you know, the same was said, the same criticisms were levied against ICANN when it pulled out of the Marrakesh meeting the first time around, and it's just one of those things where, you know, we certainly would commit to circling back to that region once the health emergency had subsided. But I think all of those can be managed, and I think that, you know, if there's any level of concern, I think there's just a general undercurrent, at least amongst a large segment of the community right now, that this meeting will be relocated, and I think everyone's just kind of wondering when and where. So I don't think that that would be too disruptive. So, those are my thoughts. Again, personal thoughts. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Michele.
Thanks. I think I kind of agree with most of what James has said. There's a few things. First off, as James said towards the end there, a lot of people are expecting this meeting to be relocated. For a lot of us, if that's going to happen, if there's going to be a change of location, if there's potentially going to be a change of date, then making that decision and announcing it as soon as possible is helpful. I mean, it's very helpful. Making changes further along isn't particularly helpful. In terms of the things like around ability to get refunds, et cetera, if the Zika virus was not known at the time that ICANN originally planned to locate the meeting there, then maybe the insurance covers that. I know when you changed the other meeting, my insurance wouldn't cover me because it was already known. Holding a meeting in Vegas, I think actually it's not a bad choice at all. It's one of the few locations which does have a very, very broad range of hotels that cover pretty much every budget, which is something that I know ICANN tries to address every time you choose a location. I think that's, and it's accessible from pretty much everywhere. It's not a hard place to get to. Spending more than a week in Vegas per year, it will kill most people, but that's okay. I think we can get past it. Ultimately, as I think, you know, there are concerns from a lot of people around the Zika virus thing. There's more news coming out about how it impacts people in different ways. So I think that's going to be a concern for a lot of people. So maybe, you know, saying that you could hold a meeting there in a year or two's time when there aren't these kind of concerns might work. I honestly don't know. Whatever you do, all I'd ask is that you please, if you're going to make a decision, that you make it and you don't change it afterwards. And as James said, but Nick and Tansy both do a fantastic job, and no matter how much you're being paid for it, you're probably not being paid enough to deal with the stress. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Alan, and then Chris Wilson. Alan, please.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm basically agreeing with what Michele and James have said. It does strike me that we're a bunch of men talking about something which has a very significant impact on women, although, as Michele said, we're now hearing more things about the virus. From an at-large point of view, moving out of the region has very significant impacts, because of things that are organized, including, you know, Next Gen, and we're looking at the potential for a General Assembly within North America, which clearly doesn't happen if we move to Beijing instead. So although I personally abhor meetings in Las Vegas, that's, from some perspectives, certainly a reasonable alternative. I didn't catch, were the dates that we're talking about the same dates, or are they different dates?
Yeah, this is Nick. Yeah, the dates are different. It was October 29 to 24. Now, excuse me, to November 4, and now it would be October 22 to 28, the week prior, which does not conflict with any major religious or national holidays or other industry type events.
No, but it may conflict with things that we have arranged, knowing when the ICANN meeting is.
Of course.
Certainly, I think we have to act more on the prudent side than on the there's dangers everywhere. That's a personal opinion, not necessarily agreed to by others and at large. So I think we have to be careful. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Chris Wilson, Business Constituency, please.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Nick. I guess real quick clarification, Nick. I assume Vegas is really the only option. And I don't say that with any sort of preconceived idea. I think Vegas is a fine option. But are there other cities that are still being explored, or is it basically Vegas October 22nd and or San Juan the week later? Are those the two choices?
Well, we have a limited number of other choices, and I saw all the chat about location recommendations. I've got a list of about 200 venues that we checked. The answer is that we think that the Las Vegas venue and dates are the best. We do have an option in Macau, as well as an option that we're holding in Orlando. But again, they're not. The one in Macau is over the same dates. The one in Orlando is very similar to the Las Vegas dates, varied by one day. So we change our pattern by one day, and that's pretty much it. No, there's nothing else out there. We're so large. There are so few facilities we fit in. I think the good news is, if we do go to Las Vegas, we're not settling. This is a venue that is excellent for this meeting.
No, thank you, and I appreciate that clarification. I would simply say, I think from my point of view, and I've talked with the BC on it, but I think there's expectation that we would move this meeting. I think to be consistent, I mean, the same rationale, frankly, for moving meeting B applies to meeting C, and it would seem a little inconsistent to stay in one place and not the other. Just that's my personal point of view. So I appreciate the hard work you and your team have done on finding a new venue, and we'll work with you going forward. So thanks very much, Nick.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else on a comment or a question? Nick, some last words or next steps as you see it.
Next steps is we'll consolidate these remarks. The sentiment seems to be leaning towards that we should move the meeting out of San Juan. We'll then take that to the board on Thursday, because we have a paper into the board right now on this very topic. So this will inform your opinions will inform their decision as to which way to move. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Nick. And I guess just to recount, that Thursday is a special board meeting on the 14th of April. You may have seen the agenda that was passed around to the GNSO Council. Thank you very much. With the time allotted here, I would like to turn it over to the next item on the agenda, number 7, to come back to a discussion we've been having now for many months with this group and a subgroup in particular on the community activity matrix, which is linked, to the work activity of your groups and the prioritization of those so that there would be a larger picture of the workload across the SOs and the ACs. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Rob Hogarth to go forward on this. Rob?
David, may I jump in here for one
I'm sorry,
second?
Nick, please.
Nick.
Yes, of course.
We were going to cover also ICANN 56 in Helsinki. Tanganyika was going to do that, and I guess I should have set that up. Do we have time for that?
We do. We do have time. Tanganyika, quickly, if you could, please. That's another important element to prepare people for. And there's been discussions about how to do that. So that's okay. Please.
I will be quick. As you know, following conversations we had in Marrakesh, you all nominated one or two representatives to help us with further coordination between all the groups to take a broader look at the schedule and see what might be missing from the agenda and what we might have conflicts with. The group had a call on the 24th. It was very productive. The end result was that we wanted to see more issue-based approach to the schedule. So in the afternoon, we're going to see if we can fit topic sections in there. Everybody submitted their list of topics from each group, and I've gathered all of those together, which you'll see if you go ahead and scroll to the last page of this PDF. I bet I could do that, couldn't I? There we go. So all the topics are now, I've put them into a quick survey form, and we're going to ask all of the representatives from your groups to see what the top six, because that's how many places we have to fit these in, what are the top six that everybody wants to see. And that won't mean that other topics can't be covered. It just that those would be the biggest ones that go into a large room to be covered. Once we do that, I'm still aiming to get a block schedule posted by the end of this month. Wish me luck.
Thanks, Tanganyika. There's a question in the chat, are these details reflected in the wiki pages already? You'll probably make these available. We'll send them around.
Yeah, I'll update the wiki page within 5 minutes at the end of this call. So you see it here, but no, it's not quite updated there yet.
Good, and I'll take the slides and share them as well on with the group. Any other comments or questions for meeting B preparation? I thank you, Nick and Tanganyika, for doing that. Okay, and we'll have people go back. You're looking for the top six of common topics that might be used for those afternoon sessions and meeting B in Helsinki in the afternoons time slots after the regular work and schedule of our various groups. So thank you very much. With that, I would like to go to item 7 and recognize Matrix Maven Rob Hogarth to talk to us about the work he's been doing for you and with you on the community activity matrix. Rob, the floor is yours.
Thank you, David. I'm not sure if the term Maven applies, but I'll accept it on behalf of all the other members of ICANN staff who are contributing to this effort. I appreciate it. With such a media agenda, I'm happy to address an item that's important but not quite as urgent as some of the other things that you have all been talking about today, although it does relate, I think, to some of the conversations you've had earlier in this call. This past weekend, I shared with you link information to now the second iteration of a new format of a community work effort inventory report that we have been working on. Rafiq, you will recall you were one of the main instigators of this some time ago, in that generally as a group, the community leaders weren't satisfied with the original sort of Excel spreadsheet list that we had all created as a group. And so we endeavored to find a new means and mechanisms for more effectively collecting the information, creating a timely and common lexicon or template for collection of information to account for the various ways that your individual communities track your work, reflect your work, even categorize your work. And so the current report that's on the community wiki is the latest version of that effort. It is still, I emphasize to all of you, a work in progress that I'm hopeful will continue to get good feedback from all of you on how we improve it, how we can adjust it, how it can better reflect some of the work of the community generally and of some of your particular groups individually. I think the challenge that we have going forward, and sort of reminding you all sort of where we started on this, was the fact that when this group got together back in Los Angeles in 2014 to talk about prioritizing the work of the organization, a subgroup of you that David mentioned earlier got together and said as the first step in prioritization, it was necessary to establish this inventory. And while we continue to work and fine-tune, maybe even evolve the current version of the document, and as we experiment on various items like how do we collect and really reflect not only staff time but community time to some of these efforts, how will you as a group ultimately look at that information for prioritization? And is this indeed an effective tool for doing that? I raise those questions right now somewhat rhetorically, simply because I think that that is something that the original subgroup should now begin to revisit. And as I indicated in my note to all of you over the weekend, that's something that David and I have chatted about, and I hope we'll get some commitment from a number of you to revisit and re-engage on. I think when we look back now, David, at the subgroup that originally looked at the prioritization of community work, that group, through attrition and transitions among leadership, now stands at just Rafiq and Patrick. And so I think that what we'd be looking toward over the next several weeks is whether a number of you who are new to the group or some of you who didn't have the bandwidth before might like to step forward and collaborate a bit with us on what the next steps might look like in terms of the inventory tool itself, as well as what might be done with it going forward. I think Margie and Teresa and Larissa provided a really neat sort of case study for that for you all earlier on this call when you first started to talk about the AOC reviews. That reflects work that's coming down the pike. And I think when we then compare that with work that's currently on your plate, there is potentially a need for further conversations about how things get prioritized, how they get ordered, or maybe how you spread them out a bit. So I'm not going to get into a lot of details on the current inventory itself. We can leave that toward conversations, I think, that you share with David or me specifically about aspects of the document that can be improved upon. But I think as you all, as a collective group of leaders, sort of move forward on this, we will look both between now and Helsinki and potentially in Helsinki when you all gather to have further conversations about how we can really potentially operationalize some prioritization conversations, assuming that we continue to evolve the document that you'll all be looking at over the course of the next week or two. David, that's essentially my overview. I did have a series of slides, but I didn't think time-wise it's productive to really go through with them. We can share those with the group. They're fairly self-explanatory and really delve more into the specifics about how we set up the current document and how it's set up to collect information. But I think it's some of those bigger picture issues that are necessary to talk about. Because one final point is, while you see a fairly simple document that presently exists, when you actually start to peel back the layers of it, there are a number of really useful aspects, but there are also a number of areas that we really need to resolve in terms of data collection. And one of the things that I think some of you from who are related to the GNSO may appreciate from several years ago, and James, this may be an area that you're going to start to look at over the next several months, is that the larger discussion about priorities really creates some major challenges. And so I think a broader discussion that all of you have about where are we right now in terms of the information and is it of value to us and how might we use it for further discussions is really the level at which this group may want to have further conversations about this. I'll stop there, David, and see if there are any questions or comments folks want to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. There may be some comments from either Rafiq or Patrick if they care to talk about how this evolved and the usefulness of this document to give an overview of work of the community and how to, in a sense, adjust or manage the workload for most effective ways. James, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you, David, and thanks, Rob. Very much appreciate this update. So just as a heads up, and I think you alluded to this, I have been chatting a little bit with Marika and other folks on staff to put together a similar effort within the GNSO to identify all of the work streams that are going on, but also to try to calculate a rough capacity for the volunteer community and essentially get an understanding of what can be undertaken at any given time and how close we are to hitting or exceeding that capacity for workload. You know, that's just getting started. I think there's a lot of overlap and relation to this work. So if you could just please volunteer me for, you know, to join Patrick and Rafiq. And I think maybe I can contribute that way. Thanks.
Happy to do that immediately. Thank you, James. Thomas Schneider.
Hello, can you hear me now on the phone?
Yes, we can, Thomas, please.
I had to change the train, so I hope I didn't miss too much of the discussion, i.e. the slides. If I get this issue right, then it's about the workload and prioritization, which is something that if you look at the last GAC communique, is one of the very few pieces of advice that we give the board, that we urge the boards and the whole community to prioritize better, because we have been drowning in work, knowing that many most of the government representatives have a number of other issues in their portfolios as well that they need to deal with. The past 2-3 years were really too much in terms of workload. So we are urging to better take priorities, or try to take priorities. And I wonder whether let's say such an if you allow me to say, bureaucratic exercise is absolutely necessary, because in the end it's a political or maybe also an economical decision that you can get out of a discussion, for instance, like a community discussion in Helsinki. What are the key issues that people feel that they want or need or have to advance, and what are other issues that may wait one more year? So this is not the prioritization, at least, is something that at least I think is a political and economical decisions, where you don't need to do large analysis and working groups and write papers and matrices about it. At least that's my personal feeling. So I think in the GAC you may get a quite straightforward answer about what are priority issues and what may be less priority issues. And I think that may be the same for others. So I just urge you to be pragmatic, but to actually do prioritization. Of course, everything is important, but not everything is as urgent. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. This discussion goes right back to the earlier one we had on reviews, and I think we need to make sure that if we're going to try this kind of effort, and right now we do prioritization by simply things drop off the bottom because we just don't have the resources. So clearly a lot of things have gotten lost in the last year and a half when we've been working on the transition and accountability. And, you know, we may not have consciously made those priority decisions, but we made them. But if we're going to try to do this kind of exercise, we have to factor in it all, including all of those reviews, which are going to be a heavy load. So just saying let's think globally if we're going to look at this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Thomas again, or is that an old hand?
Sorry, that's the old one. I take it down.
Okay. Anyone else on this topic? If not, I would ask Rob to give some last words, and I'll do a quick summary. Rob?
Thanks, David. Yes, my takeaways from this are that we will work to pull back together the subgroup along with some additional volunteers and folks who aren't able to volunteer who may want to act as advisors will take advantage of anyone's bandwidth that we can. David, I really like Thomas's idea about sort of focusing, you know, taking away at least the discussion from a prioritization standpoint to perhaps a more basic conversation about priorities and what are some of the top issues that individual communities want to be seeing ICANN working on. And that's probably going to dovetail very nicely with Yoron's arrival and some of the conversations that he has with all of you. I think what we'll be looking to the subgroup for is going to be feedback on the inventory itself and whether that tool in and of itself is of value. Again, it was created with the idea of having the inventory for prioritization in mind. Some of you have given feedback that it's a very useful window just informationally to get a sense as to what's going on in other communities. So I think part of the future conversation for you all will be to say to yourselves and among your communities, is this type of tool of any value? Is it useful? Do we, you know, feel that the staff and community effort to help establish and collect and report this information, whether that's of value as well? So, David, we'll move forward on both tracks there, probably simultaneously or at least coincidentally, and see what feedback we can get from a smaller group that can then come back and inform this larger group of folks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rob, and indeed a possibility might be that to start that discussion just about priorities in particular at our face-to-face meeting in Helsinki might be a way of doing that. With that, I want to thank people. I just wanted to quickly recap four people that we will share the slides, obviously, and the recording and transcriptions will be made available, and I'll send you a note about this. Akram, in the opening, talked about the importance of these monthly calls to so many of us, the need to exchange information and views on important topics as we've done today, and likely that this needs to be continued and will be the view of Yoron to do so. Teresa provided us an update with the work on the bylaw changes post-Marrakesh and encouraged people to take a look at that and to review them and to comment when those are put forth. In terms of the AOC reviews and the scheduling, there was many talks about the need to look at the timing of certain reviews, particularly the WHOIS ones and the ATRT3 in particular, and how that might be looked at or adjusted with the all workload of the schedule workload of the community at the moment. The GNSO chair had asked his community leaders of the chairs to try to find out the views of their groups about this, and we'll help to facilitate the collection of those views to share them with Teresa and her team. In terms of the conduct at ICANN meetings, there was a view expressed that expertise in this area, maybe above and beyond that which the community might have, should be looked to for best practices in any policy established and procedures established to make sure that we have a safe environment at ICANN meeting free of harassment and other challenges. And we'll be sending a note around about various options about that. But at a minimum, of course, the group wanted to make sure that they could comment on and input on this type of policy and or procedure going forward. Finally, in terms of ICANN 56, we thank Tanzania for giving us an update on the afternoon sessions, and we're asked to look at the top six topics to look at for the afternoon of those days. And with ICANN 57, we thank Nick for telling about the situation there. The trend seemed to be to move the Puerto Rico location away from the Zika virus challenges and look for a new venue that might work within the time frame of the regular ICANN meeting in October. And finally, Rob talked about the need for recreating the volunteers on the subgroups, and we thank James Blittle for offering to do that, about the need to operationalize and prioritize this matrix, not to have it as bureaucratized, but in essence a priority and conversation on that, which might be a good topic for our face-to-face meeting in Helsinki. With that, I'd like to thank everyone. We will schedule another meeting, a teleconference in May. The schedule will be coming forth soon. I will share all the information with you shortly. And with that, I'd like to wish everyone a good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, wherever they may be. Thank you for your time and attention. We appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Thank you all.
Thank you, and bye-bye.